Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Hi, PageCast listeners, and welcome back to the splendid podcast from Jonathan Ball. My name is Mamouin Bao, and I'm a reviewer with the Johannesburg Review of Books. I'm joined today by the excellent Alistair McKay, whose short story collection, The Lucky Ones, has just been published by Queller Books. Alistair is also the author of two novels, 2022's It Doesn't Have to Be This Way, and 2024's The Child. It's 2024, yeah.
It was 2024, yeah.
All right, let's jump in with an easy one first off. So I obviously really enjoyed this collection of stories. It was quite kaleidoscopic. That's why I'm here. I wonder if you could say something about its genesis, you know, how it came together.
Sure. Thank you for that and for the warning that it's the easy question that you're starting with. This book sort of just came together from stories that I'd been working on. So I often find writing short stories very, it helps clear my mind if I'm struggling with a novel. So I work on short stories all the time. I've been working on them for a few years. And so some of these stories were a couple of years old and I'd written them while I was working on the two novels. And I started just wanting to put them together to see if I could make a collection work from them, see if there's a theme that unifies them. I wanted a collection that's diverse enough to be interesting for the reader, because I don't really like short story collections where they seem very, very similar. So then it was about trying to find the right balance of what is the theme and what does tie together. And once I had a sense of what I wanted it to feel like, I then wrote to fill some of the gaps. So then there were some stories that I felt like I needed to capture that kind of type of person or that kind of life or that kind of feeling, and I was trying to fill those in. Yeah.
And what would you say ties it together? You know, what's the overall? I mean, definitely as a reader, you can spot that there are themes which kind of daisy chain between them in very interesting ways. But what would you say ties them together?
There's a quote that I love, which I can never remember who said it, but that the last person who should tell you what a book is about is the author of that book. But I suppose for me, the theme would be, well, the things that tie it together are just people trying to connect with one another when life pulls them in different directions, and trying to find some sort of hope and community and intimacy in a country, I suppose, especially like ours, where that is quite difficult and where a history has pulled us in different directions and has resulted in us having very different upbringings and circumstances and contexts and families. And so I suppose the characters in this book are trying to reach across those divides and trying to embrace each other. And sometimes they're failing and sometimes they are heartbroken, but sometimes there's hope and joy in it as well.
So a lot of the stories kind of have local settings, but then you also do bring in this bit of international dimension to them, where, you know, a character might, for instance, travel to New York, for instance. And was that a deliberate sense on your part of wanting to make the stories more cosmopolitan in nature?
I don't think it was so much, maybe, who knows how aware we are of our own intentions, but I think it was more that I was lucky enough to spend a few years living in the US. And so while I was there, I feel like it did give me distance and it did give me a sense of context. And I think we sometimes see the society that we're from more clearly when we step out of it for a while. And I like the tension of what it reveals about South African society and maybe myself. And so therefore my characters, if I was outside of South Africa for a while. So some of the characters that you mentioned, there are a few stories that are set in the US. And one of the characters is a South African, I think one, maybe might be more, is a South African person in New York. So I like the tension of what I could explore with that dynamic of being separated from the culture that you grew up in and what it reveals about yourself and your prejudices. And then I guess for others, it was just wanting a bit of diversity. So there's a story which is set in an East Village bar where there's literary readings going on, and there's no connection to South Africa in that story at all. But it was just, I wanted to explore different kinds of characters, I suppose, and different lives.
You're leading on to my next question, which is that I think short stories are often a very telling insight into the writerly craft, because, you know, it's this opportunity to tell a complete or, you know, mostly complete story, but you're doing it in brief. You're doing it, you know, in this very particular kind of art form. For you, as someone who also writes novels, you know, like proper long, full-length novels, long-form stories, what is the draw of the short story, perhaps?
Oh, I love that question. I think what I love so much about short stories is that they're almost a purer form of emotion. Mm-hmm. I think in a novel, there are so many moving parts and there's so much of a life in it. With a short story, you can be much more focused and hone and get really close to a particular moment in a life. Or I mean, some of these stories are not a particular moment. They actually span generations. Mm-hmm. But I think just having to be so concise and... it just gives you a kind of clarity, I think, that you don't get distracted by all the details that you have to have in a novel. If you're reading a longer piece, you need to know, you know, where the characters grew up and, you know, their relationship with their families and all of those details, which I also enjoy writing when I write the novel. But a short story, I suppose, is freer in that respect, in that you don't need to worry to the same extent about that. And you can, I think, have a really intense emotional, well, that's what I try to create, is an intense emotional experience for the reader in a short amount of time. I think there's something quite magical about that. I did a creative writing degree, and one of the short stories we had to read in that was called Bullet in the Brain, Tobias Wolff, I think it was. And it's only a 3-page story, and it covers his whole life. And even within the 3 pages, half the story is takes place just within the second that a bullet enters his brain, he gets shot. And I'm getting goose flesh just remembering that story. So the amount of emotion that you can put into such a short space, I think, is really powerful.
No, thank you for that. I think I spoke about the kind of kaleidoscopic nature of your stories, and I want to emphasize that, because I think you do really well to bring an entire raft of characters whose identities span, you know, class, gender, age, you know, race, sexuality, and so on and so forth. And inhabiting those voices in the way that you do, placing us with a particular character, often characters who come from very different worlds to your own, is not the easiest thing in the world to do. I mean, a lot of very accomplished long-form or novel writers fail at writing convincing short stories because they can't inhabit other people in that kind of brief way. How did you craft that skill that you have of getting into other people's minds and being able to tell a story that is about someone who, say, lives in a township, or who lives in, for instance, you know, an alternate kind of reality, sort of post-apocalyptically, and so on?
Thank you for that. I think I'm not sure how I crafted that skill. I think growing up, I felt a bit like an outsider, and I felt I was quite a lonely kid. And I think maybe that played a part in it. I became very I watch people very closely, and I think I'm quite observant. And I sort of notice small gestures and people holding back, or I can see when they want to say something, they don't say it. So I think there's a lot of just noticing the details of how people behave with one another. And then I suppose maybe just having a good sense of empathy, trying to read a lot myself, trying not to lead a blinkered life and only mix with the same kinds of people that I, you know, grew up with or whatever. And I'm not sure what else would go into it. I think maybe those are the things that make it. I think there's also a kind of almost character, I don't know if you can call it, not character acting, what's it called when an actor... Method acting.
Yeah.
Yes, where I sort of try and imagine, even if a character that I'm creating has a very different life from my own, I still try and sit in the scene that I've created and think, well, how would I, if all of these things had happened to me up until this point, and if I was this kind of person, what would it feel like to be in this moment?
Yeah.
And so then hopefully that is what makes it a convincing.
It is. I think, I mean, you're being modest, but definitely, given that historically a lot of, especially South African literature, has been characterized by people going like, no, I can't write from the perspective of, you know, a black working class person because that's not my lived experience. There is both, you know, a kind of challenge, but also a risk involved in kind of inhabiting that. And I like that you take that up and that you actually are willing to do that.
I mean, I know it's a fraught subject. I know that there are people who feel very strongly in both directions. But yeah, I think I have to try and write like that. I'm not really interested in just writing about middle class white people. I think that's not just less interesting for me, but also it feels like a strange political choice in a country like South Africa, which is so diverse and where white people are, you know, I think it's 8% of the population. It feels very pointed to only write that kind of life. And so I try, which is also another joy of a short story collection, I suppose, is that I can balance it all out. I can try and make sure that it's not just, so that there's a good balance of the kinds of people that I wanted to explore in it, and it doesn't feel like I've made one choice to only write this kind of person.
And I mean, having done this and having put this collection together, are there characters that you felt especially close to, or characters where you know, I think when I write a short story, not that I do that often, sometimes you leave off at that sort of natural endpoint and you think, oh, that's a character I'd like to come back to. Mm. That's a character, you know, I might want to take further in a particular way. Were there characters in any of these stories that you really resonated with that you thought maybe you can build something more there?
There are, you know, it's quite funny. I didn't notice. My husband said to me that I love writing about old women, which I hadn't noticed until he pointed it out. And so I think there are a few of them in this book. And it's weird. The whole idea of whether you relate to someone or not is quite a strange question, because it doesn't necessarily link to how similar your lives are. You know, there's a lot of the emotional landscape of the character, of the old woman character in that story set in New York, the one that I mentioned earlier, that I relate to. I find her very moving. Mm-hmm. I love the character of Andile in The Lucky Ones, the title story. Yeah. I really love him. I think he's an amazing person. I kind of feel like he's a real friend of mine, even though
that's
I know I created
him. One of those stories where I thought, this, you know, I want to know more, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And then I guess there's also a character who lives in my head who I haven't been able to find the right story for yet. Mm-hmm. And so that's also an interesting question, is that when am I going to have created the life that she needs, you know? Mm-hmm. But she's living there. But I like leaving stories, they're quite often open-ended, so I quite like leaving the reader able to imagine what happens for the rest of that character's life. So I suppose I also often imagine how they ended up, what they're up to these days.
I think, I mean, obviously that's a necessary part of the short story, that, you know, it feels like you're just kind of leaving the room and everything is carrying on without you, and that's definitely... You know, again, it's a skill that not many people can pull off as successfully. So you should definitely pat yourself on the back for that.
Thank you.
Something I wondered about reading a number of these stories was definitely what I'll call the kind of choreography of your characters. You know, the kind of worlds that they live in and the places that they inhabit. And I think invariably, you know, a short story succeeds or fails by how richly you can kind of populate that backdrop, how much you can make that texture kind of feel real. Okay. And I wonder, you know, again, there's always that question of risk in my mind, you know, especially when you're writing in our very particular local kind of context. You know, if you write something and you set it in Cape Town, you have a character, you know, going to the waterfront and experiencing the strangeness that is that world, you think to yourself, like, ooh, I could get into trouble here. I don't think those people read, but do you ever think to yourself, like, you know, I'm taking a risk here by painting this world so vividly?
That's funny. I guess I was very naive about that. It didn't occur to me that the management of the waterfront could be upset about the portrayal of that takes place in that. I don't think I say anything that would be particularly damning, aside from, I think it's more of a commentary on, I guess, how segregated Cape Town can still feel. And that's not their fault. It's not the management of the waterfront's fault. I just love being immersed in a story where there is so much texture and where you can imagine the place as if you're in it. And so I suppose I do try and include all of that detail. And it's where, you know, even if you're writing a character that's very different from your own, it's where the whole write what you know thing comes from. It's where I can throw in some of the details from observations of places that I've spent some time, even in a different person's life. But I didn't think that anyone was going to be angry with me. Now you give me something new to worry about.
Not to give you a complex about it. So I think, I mean, as someone familiar with your novels, there are definitely some themes in the short stories that I can see parallels to, or definitely echoes of, in terms of, you know, the environment and its eventual or possible collapse, the place of the human in the world, you know, queer life in the 21st century, and a couple of things. You know, I think to myself, like, oh, I can see, you know, echoes or preoccupations, I might call them. What's the relationship for you between the kind of short form stuff, the short stories, and your longer fiction? Do they feed into each other? Are they separate territories?
I think they do feed into each other. I suppose the kinds of things that I am preoccupied with, as you say, are going to find their way into my work, whether I'm working on a novel or on a short story. I find it hard to think about the world other than in those terms, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Even when I'm trying to explore different characters and different lives, it is one of my anxieties that the climate, you know, that inaction about the climate is going to cause severe challenges for us. And so I suppose that finds its way into everything that I write. To a varying degree, though, some of the stories, so there's a story in this collection which is kind of also a dystopia, like my first novel. It's a dystopia set in the future where climate change has really gotten out of control, and young people have seized power from the older ones.
It's quite malevolent.
It was quite fun to write, actually. Mm. Let out all of my rage. But then in other stories, it'll be an anxiety of one of the main characters, or there'll just be an observation around, you know, how things are drier than they used to be, or the drought, or how plants respond. I think short stories give you the freedom of variety again, because sometimes the climate stuff can be explored in a dystopian way. There's another story in this collection which is set over the course of a hike on Table Mountain. Mm. And there I'm showing kind of the beauty of nature and how calming the main character finds it. Even though he thinks about whether or not we're destroying everything that can give us peace. Mm. So I guess these same themes will probably recur in my work forever.
I mean, you handle it productively. So it's definitely, I like that you kind of tease out ideas and in a way that is, you know, quite gratifying for the reader. And that also leads into my next question. You're very good at that. where I think the tightrope that you walk with a lot of these stories is kind of thinking about issues that are sometimes very deeply personal, but also often quite social in nature, you know, whether it be about the environment or about how people interact with each other and how that shifts depending on your generational position or your class position. How do you avoid sort of moralizing, you know, because I think you do. And I'm interested in how you kind of walk that thin line, because very often, as soon as you bring any kind of social edge into something that you're writing about, you know, there's always that, you know, that kind of balance that you have to strike.
Yeah, thank you. That's a really good question, and I'm relieved to hear that, because I think it is a huge risk with even touching any of the issues that I often write about is that I don't want my stories to seem like a moralizing or being didactic or anything like that. I suppose it's just, hopefully I'm getting better as I keep going, as I write more. I think it's quite an intuitive sense, just reading over it again and again and making sure that it doesn't feel like that. Mm. That's probably not a very useful answer, but I think
it's a very good one.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's what it's, I'm very much guided by how it feels when I read over it rather than any kind of concrete, you know, to-do list of what I must check and what I mustn't. It's just like, if it feels like it's bordering on that territory, then I try and pull it back. And it's also where it's useful to share work with other people. I had a writing group for a long time, and that was very helpful from that point of view as well, because then they can hopefully point out any blind spots I might have.
Now, I'm going to zoom out a little bit and ask you some mechanical questions.
Okay.
Who's your first reader? Who reads your work first when you're done with it?
Usually my husband. Mm-hmm. He's probably sick of that role by now, but he does read everything I write.
Spouses, partners are a good sounding board, I think,
so.
Especially. Also, they can tend to be your harshest critics, but sometimes that's useful.
Well, because you can trust them to, like, get, well, for me, I do need some affirmation, but he balances the affirmation with exactly the harsh criticisms and he doesn't shy away from pointing out things that aren't working. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember the first story you ever wrote?
There is a story that I remember from when I was very young. I don't know if it was the very first story I ever wrote, but I remember it because my mother still has it and she kept it and she's very proud of it. And it's an illustrated story that I actually submitted to a publisher, apparently, at the age of 6 or 7, and I was rejected, very sadly. And it's kind of
a publishing journey.
It's a dragon adventure story with lots of spelling mistakes, but it's quite sweet.
That is sweet. Let's talk about method briefly. Mm-hmm. When you write, do you write long and cut, or do you kind of do sort of the outline and then fill in?
I really wish I could write long and cut. I think that would probably be better for my mental health and for getting momentum going. I'm very bad at being able to build momentum, actually, because I sort of try and edit myself as I go, and mm-hmm. I try to make sure that the sentence is perfect and that the paragraph is saying exactly what I wanted to say before I can move on to the next paragraph. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to change that. So ask me again in a few years. Hopefully it'll be a different answer. Yeah, but at the moment I don't end up cutting much. Sometimes I do, and I find it very difficult. I know some writers cut huge swathes of their work, and I would find that very hard to do.
It is tricky. It is. That links to, again, my next question. When do you write? What's your writing method? Do you have are you one of those writers who, you know, wakes up at 3 a.m. and writes until 5 with a cup of coffee or a bottle of whiskey? Or
It is sort of that version of it, but not that extreme, thankfully. But it's early mornings are my best time for sure. I try and write early-ish, not 3 a.m, but maybe 6. Usually often get up at sort of 5:36 and then try and put in a couple of hours. Especially when I'm working on a project and I want to get the book done, I think I have to write every day. If I don't, then it takes me almost a whole day to get back into it and to pull the flow again. And it also, it helps with the excuse of, you know, I mean, a lot of writers say this, but I don't think you can wait for inspiration. So I do try and just force myself to be there for a certain amount of hours every day. And then some days nothing useful will come out of it, but other days it'll be good. Mm-hmm. My main issue, maybe for a lot of people in 2025, is that the distraction of the phone. So making sure that's in a different room is the primary thing that is important. Yeah. And then I guess sometimes I'll have an idea late at night, but I don't tend to write at night. I don't think very clearly at night. But if I have an idea for a new story, then I've got a whole folder on my phone where I'm always writing little ideas and little maybe snippets of conversation that I've overheard, that kind of thing. And then I'll consult those in the morning.
And are you someone who writes in a kind of neat and ordered space, or do you prefer the kind of bomb site?
I've ended up with a bomb site. I don't know if it's what I prefer. I just don't know how to not live like that. Yeah, my desk is absolute chaos. There's stuff everywhere, which I guess was useful when I was working on the two novels, because then I have a corkboard and I can, you know, out of the chaos, I can try and put some sort of order, and I pin things up on the wall and link things together. When I'm writing short stories, there's no reason for the chaos. I suppose it just follows me wherever I go. Lots of coffee mugs and wine glasses, I suppose, if I am writing at night. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part of the process. Yeah. I'm going to ask you a slightly unfair question. Obviously, it's titled The Lucky Ones. And I mean, that is a really strong story within this collection. Is there a story in here that you would say is your favorite, or one that you're really, really proud of? You should be proud of all of them.
Thank you. That is a tough question. If I have to choose one, I do love all of them. That's the reason they're in here. There are many stories that I've written that aren't in this collection. So it was my favorites. So if I'm not allowed to choose the lucky ones, it's probably Fever Tree, which is the first story in the collection, which is probably why I ended up putting it first.
Give us a short synopsis of what Fever Tree is about.
Fever Tree is a story about a young man who has recently lost his partner. His partner died, and he is descending into a kind of madness. The fever tree of the title refers to a little fever tree that his partner gave him for his office, obviously before he died. And the main character in that, Jeremy, he's sort of falling apart, and I feel like I could really again relate to the feelings that I explore in that story. And he makes some very poor choices, but I think it's quite a good exploration of grief, I think, is probably the best description of that story. I think it's a story of kind of grief and madness, and how we don't process our grief in rational ways, or in ways that we even recognize as grief sometimes. and in trying to find some sort of release from that.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds like very heavy, heavy going. I suppose that story is quite heavy going, but there are others in the collection which aren't.
I think you do strike a good balance. You know, you kind of cross the emotional spectrum, and that's, you know, everyone, like when you're a reader, you want to be taken on that kind of journey, especially within a short story collection. Mm-hmm. And you definitely do that. What's a genre that you'd love to be able to write in if you had the chance or the opportunity?
That I think I'd be good at, or that I haven't tried
one
yet?
One that you haven't tried that you think you'd be good at, and one that you feel defeated by but you'd like to try.
I think it would be quite fun to be able to write like a sweet romance. My brain does not work like that. I'm always finding the disappointments in life and the sadnesses in life and the grief. And so I would love it if I could write something really light and, I think I can be funny, but like funny and just lighthearted and sweet, and that leaves readers feeling warm and fuzzy. Mm-hmm. I think that would be quite a stretch for me. So maybe I'll try it. And a genre that's defeated me. I think I have quite a broad palette so far.
Have you tried your hand at poetry?
That would defeat me. No, well, I've written a few. In fact, you know about one of my poems. I wrote a poem for a collection that I had the luck of being in that you were editing. I actually love doing that. That's true. And I hadn't tried poetry since I was a teenager. I wrote a lot of poetry as a teenager, a very angsty teenager. And some of it's maybe not as bad as I remember. That's true. Poetry is an interesting one. I wish I understood it better. When I read a poem that I love, it's can be so powerful and can be really moving. And then I sometimes just can't figure out what the poet means or what they're getting at. I don't know. I feel like I don't have the right way of sifting through poetry to find what I like. But when I love it, I love it. So that, I guess, makes me nervous to try writing it, because I don't really know what the rules are. Not that there are rules, but I don't really know. I can't even analyze when a poem moves me, what it is about the poem moves me. So it's hard to replicate that. But maybe I'll work on it some more.
I hope you do. I do hope you do. I think you're one of those writers. You're really good at what you kind of take your, you know, whatever you lift your pen to.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's very nice to hear.
Very, very finally, my last question. What is a piece of writing advice that you'd give to your younger self?
To my younger self? Is it cheesy to say trust yourself? I'm getting better at it, but I wish I'd known to trust myself and to stop trying to do what was proper or considered the right literary thing. You know, I was trying to create the great novel based on, I don't know, what the novels that had come before, which is good. And I do think you need to read widely if you want to write. But I think, yeah, trusting that what I have to say is valuable and being less worried about that aspect of it, so I can focus more on the craft and making sure that I'm saying what I want to say in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Alistair, thank you. It has been an absolute pleasure to interview you.
It's been wonderful chatting to you too. Thank you, Wumi.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.